Hello. Oh no, if you're not getting all together, or not at all. Hello.
Hello.
There you go. Who says London's unfriendly? If I explode or fall over, it's just I'm either I have flu and then I'm lying on the floor and crying, or I'm doing what I'm doing at the moment, which is Red Bull and Sudafed. So this might take 20 minutes, might take four! Or I could just have a heart attack. It's great being that aware of an internal organ. It's clawing its way out of my chest. And it's so unexciting. I should at least come up here and have some kind of good, hard drug problem to counteract the youth and beauty before. You're so depressing, you two guys. It's just horrifying. Attractive, talented people. Never mind. And I haven't even armed my pullover. So, very nice to be here. I'm going to read a short story. Obviously, it's nice, people, you know, short story, poem in a temple to the only profession more stupid than typing for a living. viciously unforgiving. So it's great. It's like being in Europe. So this is, obviously, it's first person, but it's not me. But unless any of you are journalists, you weren't going to think that anyway. So I'll just read this. It's called Story of My Life. In this story, I'm like you. Roughly and on average, I am the same as you. The same is good. The same is that for which we're meant. It's comforting and gently ties us, makes us unified and neat, and it tells us the most pleasant kinds of story. The ones that say how beautifully we fit. The ones that summon up their own attention. Make us look. I understand this. I understand a lot. Very often. Almost all the time. Most especially stories. They are an exercise of will. Within them, whatever I think, I can wish it to be. They are the worlds that obey me. Kinder and finer worlds. In many of them, for example, I'd have no teeth because I believe I'd do better with a beak. So why not have one? I feel that shouldn't be impossible. I feel a beak could make me happy, quite extraordinarily content, sporting something dapper and useful in that line, handy for cracking walnuts, nipping fingers, tweezing seeds. Not that I've ever fancied eating seeds, but one can't predict the path of appetite. And beaks come in different sizes, that's a plus, along with the range of designs. Toucan would be good for parties, shouting, grievous bodily harm. Ibis, mainly funerals and plumbing. Sparrow, best for online dating and eating crisps. The options, while not infinite, are extensive. In a reasonable word, my personality would give rise to my true beak, would nurture it, my proper fit. Parrot, hummingbird, bullfinch, albatross. And through it, I'd express myself, be jauntily apparent, fulfilled, really start going somewhere with my whole appearance, somewhere free from teeth, somewhere other than the dentist. Story of my life, maybe. Going to the dentist, because my teeth, they've always been ambitious, problematic, expansive. I never have had enough room for all of them, and so out they've come. Milk teeth, adult teeth, wisdom teeth, handfuls of them over the years, practically a whole piano's worth. Of course, when I was a kid, they gave you gas for extractions. General, potentially fatal anaesthetic gas, administered in my case by an elderly man with unhygienically hairy ears, who would bend in at me, eerily grinning, and exclaim every single time, "Good Lord, dearie, they're some size, those teeth." While he flourished that black rubber mask and then cupped me under it, trapped my mouth in one hard, chilly pounce. "Breathe deeply, dearie. Count backwards from 10. I'd shut my eyes and picture his tufted werewolf earlobes and count until I'd reached as far as 7 or so before I'd see these angles of tilting grey that folded in towards a centre point, bolted and sleeked at the backs of my eyes, and then rolled me down and away to the dark. Now, as it happens, I'm not good with chemicals. No choice here. I am made the way I'm made. Sensitive. In the chair, they give me nitrous oxide, and it put me out nicely enough. I'd swim deep through a cartoony, bendy black while the dentist did his work. The tugging, the twists. And then I'd float straight back up and just bob at the surface like a tiny shore-leave sailor. Changeable and landsick and absolutely smashed. My first experience of the freedom within incapacity. That swoop and thunder of delight. It's always best to meet your pleasures before you can tell what they mean. As I came round, some nurse would be attending with her kidney dish and towels. A bit broody, perhaps, protective. The motherly type, but not a mother, and therefore idealistic, if not ridiculous, about children. She would, shall we say, not entirely expect the violence of my post-operative dismay. My tiny swinging fists. And my confusion. My not unjustifiable sense of loss. I have no idea what I shouted on these occasions. A small person turning expansive, losing it, throwing it, swarming clear out into beautiful rage. I'll pretend while I tell you the story that I know. I'll say I produced at great speed and with feeling. You! Get away from me! I'll have you! I'll set the clangers on you! And bagpuss! Taking my teeth out. No one ever takes me out, except the dentist, to take out more teeth. I need my teeth for the tooth fairy. I am only 5, for Christ's sake, that's my one source of income right there. How else can I save up to run away from here? I could go on the stage and be a sideshow. My manager would want me absolutely as I am. The shark tooth girl. The more you pull, the more she grows. Ivory from head to toes. I'd be laughing. With all of my teeth, I'd be laughing. This is untrue, but diagnostic. It helps to make me plain. Because I wouldn't ever want to hide from you. The surprise of my own blood, that's true. Thick and live and oddly tasty. I never did get used to that, my inside being outside. On my face, my hands. Even today, if I take a tumble, suffer a lapse, my blood can halt and then amaze me. It's almost hypnotic, seeing myself run. And persons of my type, we run so easily. Birds' hearts thumping in us, broad veins full of shocks. Back from the surgery, next came the hangover, naturally. Really? But as a child, it would be kind, more a mild type of fog than a headache. Beyond it, I'd be given soldiers with boiled eggs, gentle food for an affronted mouth, and a sudden hunger. Oh, such a lively hunger. And a quiet mother comfort to meet it with a little spoon. Then a bath, and an early night, pelting with lurid dreams of thieves and tunnels, and running for my life, running through my life, and out the other side, and into nowhere. The coppery taste of absence. Liquid heat. Once I was older, I decided I had no more time to waste, people to do and things to be, and avoiding the dental issue became attractive. I brushed regularly, kept my head down, ate everything wholemeal for added wear, but it did no good. My teeth are forceful. They insist. So when I'm 24, 25, I'm back in the surgery, new dentist, and the first of my wisdom teeth is leaving. Local anaesthetic this time, much more practical and safe, and I haven't enjoyed the injections, but I'm hoping they'll do the trick. Mostly, my eyes gone a little blurry, but that's nothing to fret about. And here comes the dentist. Big man, meaty forearms, substantial grip. It's plain that he'll check now, tap about to see if I'm numb and therefore happy. except he doesn't. He does not. And I should pause here briefly because it lets the story breathe and even possibly give a wink. I step back to let you step forward and see what's next. This way you'll stay with us, with me, which is the point. You staying with me is the point. And no, the dentist doesn't check. He is incurious and generally impatient, goes at it fiercely with the pliers and no preamble, and here comes a clatter, a turning yank, and then tooth. I am looking at my tooth without me, grinning redly in the light. And I am puzzled because of this feeling, this building feeling, which I cannot quite identify. It is large, huge, and therefore moving rather slowly. Takes a full count backwards from 10, 9, 8 to arrive, and then I know. Then I am wholly, supernaturally aware. I am certain in my soul that I am in pain. This is hitherto unguessed at pain. Pain of the sort I have tried to anticipate and forestall with insulating activities and assistance. Numb is best. I always aim for numb of any type. But pain has found me anyway. Worse than imagination, here it is. To be fair, the dentist was upset. Looking down at me and saying, "Oh dear." A number of times before offering a seat in his office and an explanation involving wrongly positioned nerves, it was technically my fault, for having provided them. His secretary gave me a comforting and yet excruciating cup of tea. I walked home, wasn't far, dizzy and racing with adrenaline. They put it in the anaesthetic, presumably to give it extra zip. Which is to say that you go to the dentist, somebody worrying, and he then injects you with terror. Pure fear. You feel it rush your arms, cup its lip, that bird inside your chest. And it is possibly, conceivably odd that this is so familiar, so really exactly the simple jolt of many mornings, and you draw near to your house and wonder, as usual, if so much anxiety should not have a basis in fact. Perhaps a leak under your floorboards has caused rot. Perhaps you're ill, genuinely threatened by what, as soon as they knew you weren't suing your dentist and his secretary, called a head injury. This making you feel very noble for not complaining, but nevertheless, in many ways, it sounds dire. And if you really want to fret, then perhaps you shouldn't lend that guy your money. Your guy, your money, but shouldn't they still be apart? You like them both, but they should surely be apart. And what if he isn't exclusively your guy? You've had that unease, felt that whisper about him before, and is screaming today, and what if your life is in some degree wrong or maladjusted when hauling a live tooth raw from the bone leaves you and your state no worse than an average night? A convivial night? A pace or two along your path of joy? Sensitivity, you see, causes thoughts. When I reached the flat, I let myself in and sat on the sofa, hands holding each other to dampen their shake and keep out the sense of having gone astray. 25 and no real relationship, no prudent strategy, no real profession, and too many teeth. But you try to keep cheery, don't you? And you have time. 25, you're bags of it. 35, that's a touch more unnerving. Wake up with 35 and you'll find that it nags. It expects things you don't have. Kitchen extensions, dinner parties, DIY, the ability to send out Christmas cards signed with love from both of us. With love from all of us. Instead, I am house-sitting for friends. And this section of the story is here for you to like and to let your liking spread to me. Frailty and failure, they're charismatic. They have a kind of nakedness that charms. So, minding the house is company for me. Well, it isn't company. The owners are obviously away, hence my minding. And they've left their cats. And this is domesticity without effort. Brazilian cleaning lady, leather cushions, numbers of superfluous and troubling ornaments. This isn't like me owning cats, me living alone with cats. Me growing 6-inch fingernails and giggling through the letterbox when the pizza delivery man comes, peering out at him, smelling of cats. That's not how this is. There are these other people who are not me, and they are the ones who have the cats, and I'm treating their animals politely but with an emotional distance. No dependency and no indications of despair. There should be no suggestion that these friends are sorry for me, that the husband is more sorry than the wife, and that they have argued about my trustworthiness in their absence and their possessions, and have doubted the supervisory skills of a Portuguese-speaking obsessive compulsive who polishes their every surface twice a week. Tables, glasses, apples, doorknobs, the skin between the end of the ear and the beginning of my wine. I will not tell you they left behind them a plethora of mildly hysterical notes, or that their act of charity has been overshadowed by a sense of filth. Oncoming sadness. It is only important to mention that I was on this particular house-sitting evening chipper and at ease. I had fed both of the creatures, and I was going out on a date. A variation on a theme of what could be a date. We had reached a transitional stage, the gentleman and I, which is to say I had reached it and wondered if he had too. And I have to make the best of what I may get, so I was dressed presentably and poised to be charming, and had it not been for the stitches in my mouth, I would have been perfectly on form. More dentistry. Surgical dentistry, but with mouthwash and antibiotics and painkillers. Big ones. I like them big. So I'm all right. I'm stylish. And I slip into the restaurant, once I've found it, with what I consider to be grace. And it's an agreeable establishment. Italian. So I can have pasta, which is soft. And here's my date. My approaching a date. And he's looking terrific. He's looking great, like a new man. It's really amazing. He's looking practically as if he's someone else. Yes. Yes, he is. He is someone else. I am waving at someone else. The man I'm meeting is sitting behind him and to the left and not waving. No one, to be accurate, is waving apart from me. And I would love to stop waving, but have been distracted by the expression on my almost date's face. He is experiencing emotions which will not help me. But I can still save the evening. I am a fighter. I calmly and quietly explain the particular story, which is presently myself. The drugs I am currently taking, prescribed drugs, the residual levels of discomfort, the trouble I have enunciating. And perhaps he might like to tell me about his week, and I can listen. People like it when you listen. They have stories too. But he doesn't give me anything to hear. And so I talk about my roots. That story. A little bit angry, because he should have been better than he is. Should have been a comfort. My roots are 23 millimetres long, which is not unimpressive. It's almost an inch. I tell him about my roots canals. I summarise the activities involved in an apicectomy. The gum slicing, tissue peeling, jaw drilling, the noise. This is not romantic, because I no longer wish to be. Not anymore. I am watching a space just above his head and to the right, where another part of my future is closing. Falling into nowhere, tasting coppery and hot. Could be worse, though. Could be 45. When everything tilts and grays and comes to a point behind your eyes and you have not run away, you have waited for the world to come towards you, given it chance after chance. And besides this, you find it difficult to name what else you have done or who is yours. After so many years, you are aware of certain alterations, additions, the ones that would make you like everyone else, that would join you, tie you gently, allow you to fit. But they don't make a story. They're only a list. More dental adventure. That'll keep us right. Another practice. Another extraction. Another tale to tell. And that remaining wisdom tooth. It's shy. It lacks direction. The time has come to cut it out. Cheery dentist in this instance. Talkative. This is an extremely straightforward operation. It is, of course, oral surgery. But you'll be fully anaesthetised. Which is frankly the least I would hope. And dialogue, that's always a boon. Voice beyond my own, someone in whom I can believe. He puts his needle in. There we are. And the numbness goes up to my eye. Again, faulty wiring. So my mouth is now more painful than it was, and I'm also half blind. Well, I'll just deal with that then. There you go. Oh, that's better. That is good. That's great. And this is my speaking voice, my out loud voice, the one for everyone but you, so it's in italics, that way you'll know. That's better. That's sufficiently anaesthetized. You may proceed. When we're in private, like now, and I say this to no one but you, then italics are unnecessary. We can be normal and alone. No, I think you need more than that. And this is where the dentist gives me more anaesthetic, and I notice his hands smell a little like cornflakes. His gloves, they have this cornflaky scent, which is a detail that makes him seem credible and not simply a nightmare. Perhaps a touch more there. What? No, that's a bit much. And some more. Surely not. And more than that. Splendid. I can't feel my arms. Of course, the effects of the anaesthetic will usually pass after 3 or 4 hours, but working so close to an hour, as we will in very unusual patients, the numbness will pass in 3 or 4. It would be tiresome to pause here. 8 months. And in some extraordinary cases, you will be like that for the rest of your life. Here we go then. It's not that I don't appreciate the chance to feel nothing at all, but this isn't that. This is horror combined with paralysis. Only very minutely exaggerated paralysis. I can't see to hit him, I can't fight him off, and he's drilling and digging and digging and drilling, and the extraction takes 45 minutes. Honestly, that's how long it takes. No exaggeration. There is blood in his hair. It's mine. Finally, I'm released. It's over. The stitches have been stitched, and I run out of the surgery. Well, I pay the bill, and I run out of the surgery. Well, I pay the bill and ask them to call me a cab, and I run out of it. Well, I can't really run, but I leave the surgery as best I can, and I wait for the cab in what happens to be a colourful urban area, one where relaxed gentlemen stroll the boulevards of an afternoon and possibly sing. There may be vomit on a lapel here and there. Perhaps there may be vomit and no lapel. And I'm standing, just about, and I can hear a relaxed gentleman coming along behind me. He says something approaching, which is not much of a story, but is true. And I know what it means because I can speak alcoholic. I have learned. He reaches me and he says what might be expected. Excuse me, can you spare my parents for a wee cup of tea? And I turn to him with my bleeding mouth and my lazy eye and my dodgy arm and my swollen tongue, and I say, I don't know, I'm in the middle of a bad day myself. So he gave me 20 pence. And a slightly used sweet. And a kiss. Best if you can to close up every story with a kiss. If you can. Story of my life, maybe. Going to the dentist. The story that kept you here with me and that was true. In its essentials, it was never anything other than true. True as going to sleep tonight with the idea of blood beneath my tongue and meeting the old dreams of robbery and tunnels, the ones where I run straight through and beyond myself and on. And sometimes I wake up sore and wanting to set out nice fingers of bread and runny egg, and avoiding the issue is always attractive, but I am tired of speaking languages that no one understands. And I have only these words and no others, and this makes my stories weak. Impossible. Impossible as the Christmas cards from all of us. The night hugs and pyjamas, the tantrums and the lost shoes and the hoarding of eccentric objects, figurines, sea glass, washers, which are the kind of details that should not be discussed. They are impossible as hiding the so many ways that my insides leak out, show in my hands, my face. Impossible as telling you a story of a new arrival, a small person turning expansive. someone growing and beautiful but not perfect. The story of their first trip to the dentist, their first real fear I'd want to drive away. My duty would be to ensure that we would conquer, because every pain is survivable, although it may leave us different, more densely ourselves. The child and I, we would be unafraid, and we'd have stories, and every one of them would start with, "In this story, you are not like me. All of my life, I'll take care we are never the same." Yep.